and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi, Saranam, Gacchami, Dutiyampi, Tatiyampi, Sabaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Dharmam, Saranam, Gacchami, Dutiyampi, Tatiyampi, Sabaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Sangham, Saranam, Gacchami, Dutiyampi, Tatiyampi, Sabaha. I turn to the holy word for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo Prajna Paramita Hridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates illusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. the precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts: not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so, not to take that which is not given, not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct, not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority, not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so, not to publish other people's faults, not to extol oneself and slander others, not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings, not to be angry, not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. O happy blessed day, O happy blessed place, O happy blessed time, O happy blessed path, O happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutiyampi tatiyampi sabaha. Again and yet again, may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. we are here to end suffering. If any suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
What would you like to look at this morning?
Well, I don't know that I have anything particular to look at, but I'll just share a funny moment from my mentor to get us started.
So your mentor is somebody you communicate with through recording and listening? Just
absolutely.
Make sure everybody's dialed into that.
So I was taking a walk this morning and listening to one of my recordings from maybe a couple weeks ago, and was sort of talking about the idea of just not going down the roads that conditioning wants to lead me down.
Mm, yeah, just not following the little voice that says,
yeah,
come here, this is interesting.
Right, yeah. Just saying it's not good to go down those roads. And and the mentor said, the only road to go down is the road to the monastery.
Very good.
I just like that. I mean, I had forgotten that, and I was listening to it this morning, and it just... Yeah. Struck me as
that's great.
Not only very apt, but very amusing.
Yes, and the monastery could certainly be within.
That's right.
Yeah.
But I guess just in general, appreciating the recent teaching about there's no change in consciousness without a change in behavior.
Yes, we tend to think of them the other way around.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, everybody, I think lots of folks are seeing how... Yeah. We have the experience of that being so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just, I remember when Sherry's latest book, What You Practice Is What You Have, came out, I remember when I read it thinking something along the lines of, this is finally the just get over it and get off it book, just, okay, already,
Yeah, just get over it.
We've been talking about this stuff long enough, let's just get... doing it,
and here is something very specific to do that works, and we get to see perhaps how we get talked out of that, or we do it and see how it works,
right? Yeah, and just getting at that, I mean, it's certainly helpful to see things. There's nothing wrong with that, but just collecting a bunch of things I've seen.
Yeah.
And then going ahead and doing the same old things I always do is not is not taking advantage of the ultimate opportunity of practice.
Not taking advantage of the ultimate opportunity of practice, which would be
to end suffering.
To
end suffering by ending suffering.
Yeah. Right. We are here to end suffering.
Yeah,
somebody was suggesting in a group the other night that it's coming into alignment with life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When we see something and we see a behavior that isn't working and go on and continue doing the behavior, we are actually out of alignment with the information life is offering us.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're in conditioning and in suffering. And
that's
in,
right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's been a without a change in behavior, there cannot be a change in consciousness. Has been up for me, and immediately, as I shared in group Thursday night, I think it got taken over by, of course, conditioning, and it meant I have to figure out.
Which we know are dangerous words right there.
Right, I should know right then that what behaviors are not right and figure out how I'm going to stop them and, and that. Behaviors do I need to change in order to become the right person?
Yes.
And they were...
Back to the old karma. Back to the karma.
They were big, of course, the story was they were big, some big changes I needed to make that I couldn't actually see.
That's a very effective ploy, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
And then it was just proof of my ineptitude that I wouldn't be able to change that behavior because I couldn't see it, and things were just hopeless.
Yes. Yes.
So.
I think a lot of people, in my experience, find their way to therapy believing there is something.
Oh.
That they can't see that it's hideously wrong with them, and I mean, I'm sort of giving away my own process, but yes, that same using something hidden to blackmail us.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Fix me. I know there's, I just know that there's I'm wrong in some way. So if you could just help me fix that, everything's gonna be. Everything would be great.
And meanwhile, life is humming along over you while conditioning has you engaged in looking for the hidden defects.
The really big defects.
The really big ones,
it's interesting. I mean, I just said that I could see that that's still operational, when I'm having a good day and I want to just acknowledge that mm-hmm. I'm happy and I'm having a good day, I still hear that humming up. That voice coming along going, but there's some really big defects that, But anyway, that's an aside.
And good to know that it's there.
That you're just blind to and wait till you see. Yeah.
Yeah.
So to just have it pointed out by the guide on Thursday that a change in behavior can just be as simple as jumping up and down and shouting yes, or to just watch when I when my energy's flagging, or I've been caught up into just do anything in that moment to change my behavior,
mm-hmm.
and that was a huge breakthrough for me.
Just do anything.
As soon as
you realize you're in some identity, or you're going down some road, or that you don't want to go down.
Do
something that shifts the energy.
Once again, it's not Sequoia. It doesn't have to be a big deal.
You don't have to dig out all those whatever.
Right.
It
doesn't have to be years of therapy and
Right.
It's just do something in that moment. I found that very fun to do in the last few days.
So you've been practicing?
I've been practicing with that a lot,
uh-huh.
And and just really watching how, you know, just doing something as simple as when I'm out of sight, you know, I can like jump up and down, or you know, or just sing a song, or you know, do something.
Yeah.
And how it has supported me to be able to focus my attention much. When I come back to what I'm doing, my attention is much more focused. It just kind of shakes up the system or something.
Well, it sounds like essentially you come back to the present moment.
Yeah.
You have to do that to find the willingness to jump up and down or whatever.
Right. It's true. It's like, yeah, it stops the travel down.
Yeah.
The, you know.
And then you come back and feel a lot more focused on whatever you were doing before.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. And
that's neat.
And much more energized.
Mm.
And it's just a relief to come back to that now and realize, oh yeah, there's nothing to be fixed, but just come back here. Come back here.
Be here and be energized, and
it's
a new moment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what's come up with that as well is just really watching. There's certain tasks that I do that there's just a ton of resistance to, you know. I was just thinking this morning, it's kind of like being at the beginning of a fun ride or something, and you're hanging on to the bar and you won't let go, or, you know, it's like, no, I don't want to do this, I'm not going to do this.
Right at that point. Where letting go is a possibility.
Yeah.
And then resistance sort of doubles itself, probably.
It's that dragging your foot or hanging on. And I had something come up with that, and I just really, you know, my energy just plummeted, and, you know, there's just a big conversation, like, you know, this is the wrong thing to be doing, I'm not, you know, I should be doing something else, and,
So you were doing a task, the resistance was there,
yeah,
and you recognized that the resistance was there, and were really, sounds like you were aware of it and caught in it.
Yeah, I was caught in it, even though there was a little bit of, like, trying, you know, changing behavior with it, and, you know, doing a little behavior change.
A little resistance,
and then, you know, but I just hung in there because I saw that this was an activity I have a lot of, that there's always resistance connected to.
Ah.
And that maybe abandoning ship might not be the best course of action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the resistance is unnecessary, isn't
it? Yeah.
And not only is it unnecessary, it makes it worse.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Really unpleasant.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes it not feel good. If we're just there doing whatever the task is without any stuff about it, it's just, we're just living life.
Just letting life live me, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm finally, you know, getting engaged in the task. And it seems like they're always around the computer. It's like, that's really a challenge for me.
Uh-huh.
And so getting engaged in this task, and then realizing that there was excitement arising for doing it.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that all the resistance and dread that was there was like kind of covering over possibly what's there.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
The excitement that's really there. Don't go there, Sequoia. Don't go there.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. It's not telling you, you have to resist this because if you go into it, you're really going to have fun.
Yeah.
It's telling you, you have to resist it because if you don't like it, it's horrible, wrong,
it's bad.
Yeah.
But the truth is, it's resisting it because there's something really fun there. There's something really
really feed you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something maybe to find out about this person that would go against the belief system about who she is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So just once again being reminded that when there's that great dread and resistance and it's probably the place to dig deeper.
What might be on the other side of it? Yeah, that's very exciting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sort of look forward to the next one.
Yeah, bring on the resistance. Bring on the next dread and, you know, resistance. And and let's be there for the gold.
Yeah. Yeah, I was. I had the opportunity to be in on a reflective listening call yesterday, and people were talking about exactly that phenomenon of approaching the time for the call, and just all kinds of stuff coming up. But the call is something that is so much fun and so exciting, and so it's another one. It's a little really keeping our eye on that resistance.
Yeah, boy, I remember that with the reflective listening calls, too. Yeah. Like, oh, no.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to take a whole half hour.
And then just
talk about practice. Yeah. Yeah, and then being the same thing, being really nurtured, really energized by it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah, I guess... I was what I was seeing right now is this kind of being in an attitude of gratitude.
Attitude of gratitude.
Yeah, it's kind of a nice season for that. And just how there's so much gratitude for the practice. Mm-hmm. And when during this discussion, I was flashed back to the very beginning when Sherry insisted that the name was the practice for the center for the practice of Zen Buddhist meditation, and she people would say, well, that's such a long name, it's not very catchy or anything. And she insisted
it's not
on
gonna
it.
Sell one.
Yeah, because of the word practice.
Yes.
And because you can have all kinds of centers, but unless it's for the practice of meditation or Zen Buddhist meditation. Mm-hmm. It's not Zen center, but the practice for that. And so that to me is really highlights what our practice has always been. The emphasis has always been on the practice of it, the doing of it.
Yeah. Yes, and all the wonderful tools that get created.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so along with that, one thing that arose that I was looking at was that I had the opportunity recently. Well, what it was this opportunity wasn't in my awareness at all. I didn't even know it existed. And then all of a sudden, this opportunity existed, and it was practice oriented. But because it came so fast, I made a decision, from somewhere, and that was that. And then, as I, a little bit of time went by, I could see that was a conditioned decision, and came from a conditioned place. And so, in the light room, I'm looking at that, and the first thing that I can see that conditioning will then bring up is disappointment and regret, and maybe it would go as far as remorse. But the reason I'm saying that's conditioning, the sensations might be there, the drop, but I could feel the energy drop too. And that, to me, it's like, okay, so I was, if you want to say, in the dark room, made the decision.
So there was a practice opportunity of some kind.
Yeah.
And you looked at it. It came kind of quickly. You looked at it and responded in the negative, it sounds like.
Well, it just kept going the direction I was going. Yeah, I didn't veer off to take part. And so then, wake up at some point and realize, oh man, and even there have an inkling of, oh, this is something I, that pull towards doing it, but then the bigger pull isn't towards it. And then waking up into, oh my God, I really missed an opportunity.
Whoops.
Yeah, like a whoops, which I can see through my life, I can name those, the rather larger oopses, and still, you know, conditioning, if I were to let it, could do a little twist on it.
Right, tell you what a wrong deaf person you are.
Yeah.
Look at all these, blah, 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 blah.
Right. So,
the point being, let's get her to suffer.
Right, because, so here I am in the light room, you know, wherever it was, and then realized that, oops, and then the first thing it tries to do is to churn up enough energy to bring me back, to take me right out of the light room back into its grips. Yeah. And it seems very, that particular situation seems very, not just very real, but the pull is very strong because it's obvious. It's an obvious, you know, when you look at it, like, So it's easy. I see that it's easy to go with that if I'm not very conscious.
Yeah, yeah. Continuing to stay not put. Go there.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. I just thought that was very interesting because sometimes that movement is very subtle and seems very okay because it's feeling bad about something.
Yeah, because there was disappointment.
Yeah, it was real disappointment, and then all the other stuff comes because, well, it had to do with practice, so, you know, it's almost like
that
I guess
makes
it
that
should be, it should feel bad, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't even deserve to be in the light room. I mean, there's no words like that, but, you know, that would be probably the... So I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah, yeah, and seeing how it will use things like that, and at some point you realize it's going into a conversation that is really just the main point is suffering rather than giving you any information. The first oops is information. Okay, wow, that was interesting. How did that happen?
And it was a miss.
But then
you can't, can't get it back, but...
Exactly. Yeah. But it wants to rehash, and see if it can't get you.
But the beauty of it, what I'm seeing, even just right now, is that what Cherry keeps saying in this particular email class, over and over, it seems like, is that, you know, this, what anyone does, we all do. Mm-hmm. I mean, what anyone does, in the Sangha, is a step towards, if anybody takes a step forward, we're all taking a step forward.
Uh-huh.
And that's, suppose the other's the same, anyone takes a step backward, we all take a step backward, which is real motivation to keep stepping forward. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, so, you know, when the rest of the Sangha moves forward, we're pulled along.
Yes.
So it's like that there can't be anything wrong with even that miss.
Mm-hmm.
Because somebody did it. Somebody somewhere, you know, was having that opportunity. So, it still carried on, so to speak, and I'm kind of carried on that, whether or not the person, actual person, participated, you know what I mean, in some sense.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah.
So that in that sense, you know, there's big, huge gratitude for
and it seems like that could be another way to kind of keep the story alive, you know?
What?
Sort of looking at what effect does this have? And it's not going to have. Kind of that conversation about all of us moving forward as Sangha.
Uh-huh.
And it may be that I didn't quite catch what you were saying, but it sounded like it could be sort of a way of keeping alive the possibility of getting pulled back into the dark room.
It could be, if that, yeah, I could see what you're saying. I think what I more meant by just kind of in the without making it into a big story, but I just wanted to say, but kind of in the realm of how life operates, since that kind of seems to be so, because, you know, Sherry keeps saying it, that it kind of, it helps me to move into gratitude and to drop the whole
thing. And everything really is okay.
Yeah, and everything is okay because everything goes on.
Yes.
And I'm a part of the
life
going
is
on.
Really good about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of what I was trying to mm-hmm. to say. But yeah, I could see mm-hmm. if my mind was trying to make a big story out of that, it would just anything just carries it on.
Right.
So just to move into that place of gratitude.
Back in life, back in line with life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just back in the line of the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for clarifying that.
Yes.
I've been thinking recently about saying to have more desire less. A saying that I've heard before.
Uh-huh.
To have more desire less.
Ah, okay. To have more desire less.
Uh-huh. Mm. And, mm-hmm. you know, at this time of year, we do everything in excess.
There is that sort of supercell of supersizes and
we eat too much, we shop too much, we, you know, so to keep that in balance, and I mean, I try not to participate too much in that, but at the same time, conditioning tells me to this is what you're supposed to do this time of year, and you want these things or you need these things, and you need to do all of these.
Yes, yes. And does it come in a little bit after you've done whatever to tell you how wrong it was that you did?
Or that it'll come, you know, you should have. You should have done that. You should have bought gifts for those people, or you should have, done something more than make cookies, or you know what I mean?
Yeah. You didn't do enough. Either what you're doing is too much or you're not doing enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Finding that right balance.
Yes. Yeah.
Just right.
Yes. The one it seems that says you're doing fine. You're just doing great, whatever you do. Mm-hmm. But yeah, because it does want to come in. And there is a societal support. As you're saying,
it just pushes it on you.
It's
really hard to avoid it. It's just kind of screaming at you.
Gotta live in a monastery.
Yeah, someday.
It helps, believe me.
Yeah. I would like to someday. I have a daughter who's 11. So I have other responsibilities.
And my impression is, just from various forays out into the world, is that it starts earlier every year. Was it Halloween or
before Halloween?
Just after Halloween, I started hearing Christmas music in the stores. I'm thinking, not yet. It's too soon. I can't even think about this yet. And it's supposed to be such a great giving, wonderful time of year, but then you see what happens the day after Thanksgiving. It starts in mad dashes, and people are hurt by walking to these stores, and it's craziness.
So what you're doing in your life there is really looking for balance.
Yeah.
Looking for and the expression of desire less and have more. Is that?
That it's really the desire to do these things, or the desire to get gifts or give gifts, desire to have these things, that's causing the suffering. It's not, if I don't desire those things, then I feel fine. It's all good. And that I have what I need. I don't need those things, even though my mind is telling me I do.
Yeah, and it's neat to be able to watch how that works, which is kind of what we do in the practice, is, all right, how is it going to talk me into? And then how's it going to beat me up after it talks me into? Or tell me I should have when it's told me I shouldn't? All good awarenesses that help along the path.
Yeah.
Was there more?
That was it, really.
Thank you.
I just want to say I can so relate to that, even though I live in a monastery. But, thinking back to before the monastery time and that pull out there in the world is just so strong, too.
Yeah.
engage in that conditioned reality that, you know, we only get love by what we give, and, you know, that's somehow...
Then what's going to make us feel good is something that we'll take in.
External.
Or offer to someone. We can make them feel good.
Yeah. And I was just thinking about, there was a few years back, Sherry did a workshop down in Mountain View just before Christmas, and I remember her taking us on a guided visualization and asking us to go back in time and remember the gifts that we had been given, mm-hmm. and to really let arise what were the most meaningful gifts that mm-hmm. we had received over our lifetime. And that was so powerful to me, because nothing that came up was anything that anybody had ever gone to Target and bought.
Yeah, all the gifts were ones that...
They were, you know, gifts of just the person's presence, or, you know, I mean, their actual being, not their...
Yeah,
or just acts of kindness. It just, you know, none of those things ever met. You know, a twit in the long run.
And it
really changed things for me after that, you know? It's like, I know we all think we need it, but...
Yeah. So seeing what you really remember.
Yeah.
And the powerful feelings that come with kindness.
Yeah. And it's kind of easy to, you know, living at the monastery, you can get... That's one of the wonderful ploys of conditioning sometimes, like, well, out there, they're all having, you know, whatever.
Indigestion.
Yes.
But you can use...
Just how...
There's this great thing going on out there that you're missing.
You can be out there and think, oh, they're doing a great thing in the monastery. And you can be in the monastery and they're doing a great thing. Yeah. You know, it's just all the same
stuff. Yeah, I wish Christmas could be quiet.
Right. Yeah. It's just the craziness.
Yeah.
And we're all just right where we... are perfectly.
Yes, indeed.
No.
Yeah. I've been looking at, the shift in behavior, and the shift in consciousness. And the last couple of weeks I've really been watching, and I'm developing this sense of humor with it, which is
God,
really...
That is such a lifesaver.
It is, and I think, like Sequoia was saying, like for so long, I would just be heavy and weighed down and just feeling like it was so big. Mm-hmm. And now when the voices come up or the conditioning is there, I'm just like kind of laughing at it, mm-hmm. you know? And it feels so freeing, and really like laughing in a way where it's embracing it at the same time, though.
You're not ridiculing.
No, it's not.
Particularly. Like, mm-hmm. But you're just not taking it seriously.
I'm not taking it seriously. You know, it's almost like, you know, the 1.5-year-old that's crawling towards the light socket and they're about to touch it and they look back at you, you know, and it's just like you can't help but embrace them and kind of laugh at the situation and to see, you know.
Yeah, you know they know.
I know the voices know, and I know conditioning knows, you know, and it's just kind of like holding it and trying to not get so weighed down by the seriousness that I've lived my life with, you know. Mm-hmm.
The conditioning has laid upon you, mm-hmm. burdened you with.
Yeah, because I think what happens is when I start to pay attention, my suffering comes from a place of guilt. Mm. You should not be doing this. Why are you doing this? You know better than that. You're smarter than that. Mm. And it's, you know, so it's, I can just when I start to hear those voices and just say, oh, yeah, I do know better, you know, and you're, you know, and that's okay. And,
Not to use it as a way to beat yourself up or let self-hate beat you.
Yeah.
But just, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I should.
Yeah. I will. Uh-huh. Yeah. And I did this, and it's okay.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do this. right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And just letting go and allowing myself to make the mistakes, to have that behavior and to look at it. And like you were saying, to be excited about the next opportunity when I can make a shift.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Because that business of beating us while we're doing something that it's telling us is bad and then continuing to be this doesn't allow us to see what you're seeing. Mm-hmm. There's a little 1.5-year-old here who might need a little guidance.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
We can talk about, you know, no candy before dinner.
Right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And it can be gentle.
It's
a discipline that's gentle and loving and tender and, you know,
kind.
Mm-hmm. And I think for so long, I just wanted to sever the behavior, just cut it off and be done with it, you know. But, you know, it's always going to come up, you know.
And that's a little bit like severing a part of ourselves and trying to get rid of it.
Yeah.
When it's a part that, as you, sounds like you're doing, just wants to be embraced. Mm-hmm. Just wants to know, yeah, you're okay no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Even with this behavior.
Uh-huh. That's neat.
Yeah, it's been really great just trying to have a sense of humor with it.
Yeah, and the watching is so important, a part of it. Mm-hmm. And just seeing, watching without the stop.
Right.
Bad. Mm-hmm. Just, okay, what is this? What is it like? What does it feel like? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
Great.
Thank you.
That just reminds me, the other day I had one of those moments when you see something you've seen many times, but it's just sort of blinding.
Uh-huh.
So I had made a commitment to do something and forgot to do it. A daily commitment to do something, forgot to do it, and it was so clear to me as I was brushing my teeth. Just came to me that, conditioning self-hate wanted to make a case about that, wanted to be really, right. really on my case about that, and it was just so clear to me that the next day I would do it, and I could either not have done it and get beaten up and then do it, mm-hmm. or I could not have done it and then do it.
Yes. And just drop that little
and drop
piece.
Self-hate right out of it. And either way, the result would be the same, except that in one way I feel fine and
yeah.
I mean, I've seen that many times, but it was just one of those little moments when it's just so clear that all self-hate adds is self-hate. Mm-hmm. It adds nothing else.
Yeah.
Except it's a drain of energy. It actually sucks energy away from.
If it's allowed.
It sucks energy away from. I mean, self-hate would be the main reason I wouldn't do it.
That was exactly what I was thinking, was I'm not going to do that today because I'm going to forget about doing it because I don't like being beaten up for not doing it.
Mm-hmm. Or I would be so caught up in the beating that that would be where my attention would be.
Yeah.
So it was just one of the, just thinking what was just said, I just stood there and laughed.
Yeah.
But it was just so clear that it adds nothing.
It's so, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And then just a couple things.
And detracts, as you said.
Absolutely. Just a couple of things that have come up as I've been listening to this wonderful conversation. I was thinking about that. About the notion of balance, and mm-hmm. I've had that experience of self-hate conditioning saying, sort of luring me into something and then saying, you did too much of it, you know, and then mm-hmm. luring me out so I don't do it, and then you didn't do enough of it. Mm-hmm. And what I was just seeing as I was hearing that was, and it will tell me that I need to reach a balance, mm-hmm. and that I need to rely on it to tell me what the balance is, and I'll never get there.
Yes.
Because it will never present me with that balance. I will always be off on one side or the other.
Yes.
So that's just helpful to see too, that all of that, I mean, it's one of the ways it uses the practice.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's the middle way, there's a balance, and if you just pay attention to me, I will guide you there, but I will never get you there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just, again, it's one of those moments that, oh yeah, right, I see that.
Yeah, yeah. when we start thinking about it, figuring out what it would mean, chances are conditioning is in there. Absolutely. Doing some figuring and thinking.
Yeah. And then the other thing that came up was just listening again to what people were saying. We just had, I can only speak for myself, I haven't been accompanied on this, but speaking for myself, I just had this really nice day yesterday. Yesterday in the world was something called Shop Small.
Shop Small.
And it's, I think it's supposed to be sort of an antidote to what's called Black Friday, which is the you know...
Shop Big.
That's, you know, the stores were opening at midnight and people were going to the mall. It was awful, I guess. Fortunately, not this big. But yesterday it was called Shop Small, and so spent a couple hours in the morning just walking down one side of the street in Murphy's and walking back the other.
Uh-huh.
And just stopping into some shops and looking for some specific kinds of things for some specific friends.
Mm-hmm.
And finding a whole lot of them in local shops where I uh-huh. know the owners and, uh-huh. and know their names and want to support their being in business and finding just some delightful things that didn't cost much money and just felt like, oh yes, that's just right.
Mm.
And it's going to be so much fun to send this to this person. And mm-hmm. and just, you know, the contrast, what a satisfying experience that was.
Mm-hmm.
And it's available.
Hard to shop big in Murphy's.
Well, in terms of prices, it's hard to shop big. But in terms of stores and stuff. So I was seeing how something is, again, one of those things that conditioning wants to turn into a kind of awful experience can be a delight
uh-huh.
if we recapture it. If we say, well, this is actually what I want to do,
mm-hmm.
and this is how I want to do it, and then we go ahead and do it. And as long as, you know, we're coming from that, it actually can be quite delightful.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's
again,
sort of, it's in the ballpark of commitment.
Say more.
Well, that I've looked at
oh, yeah.
how I want things to be in my life, and this is one of the things that I'm aware,
yeah.
if I'm understanding you, that I'm aware I would really like to participate in, and then to go and participate in it
right.
is very satisfying.
Very. And it's, again, one of those places where conditioning would say, either do the Black Friday thing, or just don't shop at all, don't go anywhere, don't, you know, just don't give anything for anybody because it's all bad. You know, it all just
yeah.
straddles that possible way that the heart might lead us to.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can follow that, that is the middle way, it feels like. And that's the really satisfying, deeply satisfying way that is possible to go about things.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because as you were saying that, what I was seeing was what happens in the world of duality, which we're describing, is extremes.
Yep.
And it's stepping away from those to see what's possible, because when I'm looking at not enough or too much,
mm-hmm.
it's not even possible to see that there is an alternative that might be just right.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and when I'm looking at too much or not at all, I'm looking through conditioned eyes.
Yeah.
Because that's where the definition's coming from.
Right.
And so what I'm just seeing as it feels like I just circled back to where I started, which is the key is actually to try to see through other eyes, you know, to see through what feels like what I really want or what the heart wants.
Yes.
And that just steps right out of that dualistic thing into a different
yeah.
place.
And it takes, I think, being quiet enough to hear what the heart says
yeah.
it wants.
Yeah. And I think years of practice help. But it was just, I'm just so grateful. I mean, another thing to be thankful for is the experience of participating in a way that was sheer pleasure.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had this really interesting experience the other morning, and it just, it was one of those things that sort of knocked me off of my usual axis of knowing.
Which is good.
It
yeah.
is good.
Yeah.
So I was just laying in bed before I got up, and I was doing what I like to do when I remember in the morning of being grateful for things. And and for some reason what came up for gratitude was the town that I was born in, that I lived in for the first 11, 12 years of my life. So I was laying there thinking about that town, and all of a sudden, you know, I thought of the street that I lived on, and actually I lived on the same street at two different ends and parts of my life, and one on the, and I realized, you know, that address was South 16th, and that address was North 16th, and I said, but in my mind, that goes west and east. I mean, it was like, no, that couldn't have been the north part of town. You know, it was like the north part, that part of town is over here, and north is, and I realized that. So I had to go get the atlas out and look at the map of the town, and I went, oh my God, that part is north. And, you know, it's like I had the whole town 90 degrees off in my mind, you know, and it was set, you know, and I still can't move it, you know. I can't reorient it, you know, I can't. And I, but what came to me was, wow, you know, if my understanding of that orientation was off by 90 degrees, how many other things I think I know are off by 90 degrees?
Yes. Isn't that both sobering and...
Yeah. You know, it's like, gosh, what if everything I think I remember is so...
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's both sort of delightful and alarming at the same time.
Well, we had a conversation the other night about how useless memory is.
Yeah, really.
So, bottom line, because
right, because it's
gone,
not.
It's done. Yeah, it's, we are completely a completely different being from the one who lived at both ends of whatever.
Right.
But it will pull us into some kind of imaginary reality.
I believe I have these pictures and stories of how this being sort of evolved.
Yes.
Perhaps not.
You know? Yeah, and it's really, for me, it's really fun to realize that.
Yeah.
We get together with family members and talk about how things were. Like, I don't think so.
Not my story.
You were in a different family.
Yeah. So it was just a... You know, it was one of those sort of slap you up the side of the face moments of like,
Maybe. What if right now, maybe.
Yeah, I just thought maybe, what if all the things you think you know, you don't?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's really kind of neat, isn't it? Yeah. I see what you mean about knocked off your axis.
Really?
Sort of literally.
That's right. It's just like I have this orientation and it's not correct.
Yeah.
You know?
Or at least it's not... The same as the atlas.
That's right, yeah. It's got a different version of it, right.
We don't know where they were standing when they...
That's right, yeah. I have this thing where on one of the recordings I made where I was, you know, it was you know, some kind of guidance that I was putting on my recorder, and it, and one of them that I have a really hard time remembering sometimes is about, you know, when... Something along the lines of when I'm, you know, when I'm tempted or when I think that things ought to be a certain way, to say instead, I don't know. Because so often I'm sure I have the right way, and often want to impose it on other people, you know, and to be able to drop that and go, well, I really don't know. But how much the tendency is to want to articulate the right way rather
Become, in my experience, to become the one who has the right answer.
Yeah.
Become the one who knows the right way.
Exactly.
And that is important because that helps hold that perspective.
Yeah, and it's exactly the same thing as believing. It's exactly the same thing as knowing the town goes that way, you know?
Yeah.
I know it should be this way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So often it seems like we get information that the way we were certain things were is not at all the way that they are or were.
Yeah.
But it keeps being able to fool us.
Yeah.
To thinking we do know.
Yeah. There's
and that's personal, not necessarily.
Just some. Yeah. One of those quotes came through just a minute ago that I've forgotten now, but it's along the lines of, you know, something like everything I thought I believed isn't so, or something mm-hmm. like that. I can't remember it now, but yeah.
Yeah, great fun.
Mm-hmm. Fun, and I'm sort of a, you know, kind of humbling in a good sort of way, mm-hmm. you know, sort of.
Yeah, in that example, it's so interesting that the information actually was there, mm-hmm. that you were off. Yeah. Or you wouldn't have gone to the Atlas.
No, but it's just like, well, now, the, if those were called North and South 16th Street, yeah. they ran north and south. But in my mind, they ran mm-hmm. east and west.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's really funny.
Sort of like light dropped in. Oh, really, like this?
Right, yeah. And again, it was one of those kinds of things like, and how did that, where did that come from, yeah. you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the, when I, you know, I have a box of those little cherry quote cards, you know, that you can get from some market, and mm-hmm. and actually, I think it was that day, something I, the quote I drew out was something about, like, life is, to be, something to the effect of life is never off in its timing or something like that, or mm. something along those lines, that life is perfect in its timing.
Yeah.
And all
that. Yeah.
And I just thought, hmm.
Mm-hmm. It kind of has to be, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that conversation is really something I've been looking at for a while, and particularly in the last year and a half when the whole thing of what I remembered was kind of brought up short. But my version of that is everything I, and I can't remember. Everything I think I remember, something like that, misses the point. Mm-hmm. Because it doesn't matter whether it's the correct memory or not.
It doesn't, does it?
It really doesn't, because as you were saying, I'm not the person. Mm-hmm. I'm not even the person that had mm-hmm. that experience. That person might still be in here, but I mean, obviously they are, but I'm not that person, and so it's a whole different person having that memory. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And what use, it just seems to me so helpful to look at, what actually good is it to remember?
Really, it does no good.
I mean, we do want to remember about light sockets.
Right, well, those things are kind of intuitive. I've actually been practicing just dropping it. I think the more I drop and come present, you know, the more the memories don't yeah. stick anyhow.
Yeah.
That might be one reason. Yeah. But it's like, because I watch in the older people, I don't work with them as much as I did before, but I'm around them a lot still mm-hmm. in my other job. And people can, I mean, we have a tendency to get to not remember reality anyhow, but remember what conditioning has told us about that mm-hmm. reality. Mm-hmm. And that seems what sticks. And I mean, I have had real experiences of that with people, you know, knowing that certain things did not happen this particular way. Mm-hmm. That was the way conditioning interpreted for them. Mm-hmm. And years go by, and yeah. even though people will even tell them and remind them that that wasn't the actual thing that happened, the only thing they'll remember is what their conditioned mm-hmm. mind remembered about
it. What their karma it. Has arranged for their... Yeah.
yeah. So, I mean, for me, that's a real good impetus for just letting the memories go anyhow, because mm-hmm. who knows if they're, you know, where, like, the perspective, where they came from.
Yeah. Who was there at the time? What identity? What...
Exactly,
whatever.
Because if it's a conditioned identity and it's absorbed in a conditioned way, that's the memory.
Yeah.
And it will be very bright mm-hmm. because that's it, you know. And so, I don't think memory serves a purpose, really.
Keeps us in conditioning. Keeps us then instead of now.
Yeah, it serves conditioning's purposes, mm-hmm. yeah, more than anything, because it is true. I mean, we have that experience all the time. We're not, you know, we're in the moment, and the things arise that need to be arise in that particular moment. And if they don't, they didn't need to arise, or that it was just one of those missed opportunities, and you have to go back and find the keys or whatever it is.
Right, the keys too. Yeah.
So anyhow, that's good.
I really saw clearly in that the purpose of trying to remember memories is to hang on to the identity. I've been seeing that in kind of looking at, or being kind of marveling at how tenaciously we human beings hold on to conditioning and why that would be, or how does, you know, what is that about? And it seems that the memories and the habits that have been developed out of conditioning are the only thing that is passes through time.
It's the thread that keeps all of the beliefs alive, that I'm who I was then.
Exactly, and we so want that. I don't know what that is. I mean, I guess it's just that kind of incredulous thing that we aren't going to live forever, and that we're just constantly new, and there's nothing there, and all that is just like nice to think about, but no.
Right.
And so, so I'm seeing now.
I did have that cat when I was,
and I am a person who loves cats, because I have that then, and this here, and this here, and this creates this ongoing person who has a relationship with cats.
Yeah.
And on with all those memories and all those kinds of habits, but.
It's so true.
And so that is exactly
why spinach I never had.
Right back to where we started with the change in behavior. If we break those habits and those behaviors and just be whoever is arising in the moment, as was just being discussed, what arises is what's in the moment, and what's necessary to respond is in the moment.
Yeah.
So then there you are, and that is the nippers for the.
And do you have this course is asking you to remember something, but do you have an example of that in your own experience, and perhaps as you've been looking at this recently?
There have to be a million of them, but well, just any of the karmic stories. Mm-hmm. So, you know, at a certain point in my life, this happened, and without giving the content, but now then that led to me becoming this person who now is fearful. Say
right.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so that reinforcing that identity as a person who is fearful by reviewing that story and finding stories that are happening now that are kind of like that story.
And that
keep that identity current, and then I have the familiarity with being that way, and I know who I am because I'm this way.
Yes.
And so if I do something that's different than that scared person would do. So that is really a true example for me, because in the last, this past year, one of my goals on the next year yet was, and I didn't really even know what I meant by this when I said it, but it was to practice doing behaviors that are risk-taking. Mm-hmm. And the other part of it is developing trust. Mm-hmm. And as I worked on developing trust and realizing that, when I look at my life now and just see how it works, everything always is provided. Mm-hmm. Everything's always been there. I mean, I've never been one who anybody would look at and say, wow, she's really got it all together. She's really rich, or she's really this or that or the other thing, exceptionally intelligent or anything. But yet, I've always had what I needed to survive quite lovely.
Yeah.
Quite lovelyly. and so I found myself towards the latter part of this year taking some what it, you know, if you looked at my life, are very, very big risky, making very big risky decisions. And doing them consciously, knowing that what I wanted to do was to make a decision that actually came from what I wanted to do, what I wanted to support in my life.
Yes, it wasn't about protecting yourself.
It wasn't, okay, I have this goal about taking, so doing something risky, I'm going to sign up and jump out of an airplane.
Right.
You know, it was actually in my life, things that yes. were really, they could have ended, you know, pretty bad, actually, in terms of, like, supporting myself and stuff. And they may yet, but... but what I decided was, if, you know, if I don't put something that's really of value to me,
yes,
that feels of value to my security, into something, into what I believe in life, then I am choosing to do not to follow my heart.
Yeah, yes.
And so I put,
yeah,
so to speak, my money where my mouth is the expression, and made decisions that felt like were very risky, and those weren't even, I mean, that wasn't even planned, you know, I said I want to do risky things, I didn't even know what that would look like exactly, and yet, as I came down, there were a number of them that were made, evolved out of the practice of...
Yeah, and that's perfect, because it's really challenging, this is who I am, and instead, being willing to find out, is that so?
Yeah.
And it sounds like discovering, well, no, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, and it sort of went hand in hand, as the practicing the trust then allowed for those decisions to be made without the kind of fear, you know, it wasn't like I just had to get over this gripping fear to do them. It was a natural evolution that those decisions were made with greater ease in doing those, making those decisions, because there had been kind of the working with
the trust building.
Yeah. And so even the trust building was requiring little changes in behavior along the way, little changes in thinking. And thinking is a behavior too.
So the change in consciousness evolves as you change the behavior.
And they kind of flip-flop and help each other on both sides of it, too. Mm-hmm. So the behavior changes, the consciousness changes, the consciousness creates the ability for new behaviors.
Yeah.
But, the consciousness without the behaviors, I could see a lot of things that I've become aware of over time that until the behaviors really started to change, it didn't make a difference.
Yeah.
It would be the awareness would make a difference, but then not actually putting some behavior into practice, conditioning would just swallow it. It would just come covered back
up. That's when we discovered 3 years later, well, oh, I know, I had this insight.
Yes.
Yeah. Neat. Thank you. What's your time? Thank you.